And welcome back to In Case of Emergency. I am your host, Don Pontius, author of Some Helpful Tips for Prepping and Some Helpful Tips for Bug Out Bags. I have Vinny Eastwood on the line. He has been most graciously accepting to being my guest today after taking a very long break from alternative media. Been on the radio. He's been off the radio since November.
Since December.
Oh, since December. That's right. We had plans to have you on a lot earlier, but you just needed a break. You needed to kind of like decompress and let off some steam. And again, I want to point out to my listeners, I do have a call in line. If you have any questions for Vinny or myself, area code 567-314-3081. No, I don't have an 800 number yet for people in the U.S., but if you have a cell plan, it's free, guys. I mean, most calls on cells are basically free on the weekends. If you're international, you can use your Skype to call that number and ask questions. I don't have a problem with it. Just follow the prompts. It's going to ask you for the passcode 1776 pound. It will put you in the queue and I'll bring you on. You can ask your questions. Now, Vinny and I were kind of discussing governments and how they're actually they're perverted to the betterment of the rich, basically, the rich and the powerful. They are not what they used to be, and how bad and how corrupt the government in New Zealand is, let alone what's happened in the United States. And half of this, guys, what does this have to do with preparedness? It has everything to do with being prepared. If you're not aware that there is an entity out there, whether it's a human being, a government, a terrorist organization, which could be a government for that matter, that is out there willing or wanting to do you and the loved ones that you have harm, whether directly or indirectly through physical violence or through legislation and laws that end up making you a felon just for getting up in the morning and doing something you should have the natural right to do. You need to be aware of this to be prepared for that threat. And so I wanted to have Vinny on because he's like one of the big voices in alternative media. And I'm not really all about the news. I do run some news-centric things like the Ebola outbreak, the flu outbreak this year. It's been ridiculous. How's the flu down there in New Zealand? Have you guys been hit yet?
No, not really. I mean, we because we're on the opposite side of the globe, your winter is our summer.
Right.
However, during the last month and a half, whatever, allegedly of summer, it's been cold and windy and rainy. And apparently NASA came out not too long ago saying that the sun is like at an all-time output low, and it might be that way for a while to come. Like, I don't know. They speculated like 10 years or something of crap cold weather. And for me, I don't really know, because when it comes to the future, especially the future of your extermination, I find one thing very interesting. Stress about your extermination can cause illness that will kill you before you get exterminated. So sometimes the more you worry about things that are going down, the more likely they are to kill you before they even freaking happen. And
But that's the point, Vinny. If we're aware that there's a threat out there, it should remove a lot of the worry and a lot of the stress. Because frankly, I'm not scared of the bear hiding in the woods more so than I am of the bear in front of me. But at least I can keep my eyes on the bear in front of me and be aware of what it's going to do as far as a threat. And I can mitigate that threat as much as possible.
And this is basically just about awareness of your surroundings and not denying reality. Okay, and that's basically all it comes down to when it comes to preparing for anything in the real world. The old Japanese saying is you keep one eye on the past and keep your hand on the future. It means you've actually got to be acting and responding and taking those actions now in order to prepare for that future, but you use the past as your guide to do it. So if you are an American and you look at your own history and you see that it's nothing but a history of power, powerful people basically jockeying for control over the lives of the people. And interestingly enough, it's sometimes when a bunch of different powerful people get together for decent reasons that you can really, really change things massively. Now, I'm not 100% sure what kind of lesson that connotes, but to me, when you think about freedom or trying to release a country from the tendrils of tyranny, it usually comes down to one person or a small group of people. And I think that what the mainstream media and mainstream culture have tried to sort of instill in everybody is the belief that they are not that person.
Right. Right. And let me kind of clear the air here for any of my American listeners. And you had this point, Vinny, too, but you used income tax as a point. Do you think you're free, Americans? Do you think you own anything? Do you pay property tax to a state or county or a city? You don't own jack. You stop paying those taxes. You stop paying income tax. You stop paying sales tax. You stop paying any tax whatsoever. And whatever that tax was on, they can take it from you. You own absolutely, positively nothing. You are not free. You are enslaved to the tax system. You're enslaved to the system. And they worked it out this way back in 1913 in the United States. There was no personal income tax. There was no personal property tax until 1913 in the United States of America. And I've seen over the past few years, Vinny, the steps headed towards a socialist state. Now, Saul Alinsky wrote 8 steps on how to create a socialist state, and I want to throw these out there, and we can talk about them. The number one step was healthcare. If you control healthcare, you control the people. Number two step was creating poverty. By increasing the poverty level as high as possible, poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them to live. That is a slave, boys and girls. Number three, debt. If you increase the debt to an unsustainable level, this way you are able to increase taxes, and this will produce more what? Poverty. Gun control. Remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government, and that way you're able to create a police state. Welfare. Take control of every aspect of their lives, from food to housing to income. The education system. If you take control of what people read and listen to, you take control of what children learn in school, you have taken control of their minds. Think Common Core here, boys and girls. Now, religion, if you remove the belief in God from the government and schools. Now, I don't care if you don't believe in my God, just a God, a creator, a being greater than us all, that from whom all things, like you said, Vinny, it's the highest law in the universe. All of our rights come from that highest law. If you remove that belief from the government and schools, you basically make the federal government or the physical government the highest law.
And that reminds me of an episode of The Simpsons where Ned Flanders gets to be the principal of Springfield Elementary, and it goes to absolute hell in a handbasket. There's crazy stuff going. Kids are throwing stuff everywhere because he doesn't discipline everybody. And the superintendent comes in and he sees like children in cages and stuff being bullied by other kids who popped them in there. And stuff flying all around the place, and people like scratching the blackboards with their nails just for fun. And he goes, "Oh, this is fine. I'm sure the rest of the public school system will just be sliding this way anyway. Just lay back and enjoy it. It's a hell of a toboggan ride." And then Ned Flanders cues in over the intercom and he says, "Let's thank the Lord for another beautiful school day." And the superintendent goes, "That sounded like a prayer. A prayer in a public school. God has no place within these walls. Simpson, you get your wish. Flanders is history."
Oh, geez. And again, I want to point out to all of my intrepid listeners here in the United States that public schooling would not exist in the United States if not for
Prussia.
Christian believers actually founded, Yale, they founded Harvard. Those were actually biblically founded universities that have gone so far left of center. They've taken so far off from what their basic foundational beliefs are. They've actually tried to remove the word God from the motto of Yale. And it's only in existence on one plaque on one of the gates that was hidden by a tree. And it's still there. The school hasn't taken it down yet, but They're literally creating a godless society so that, that government is the new god. We worship government. And the last point of creating a socialist state is class warfare. And that can be not just class, but racial warfare. Any way that you can divide the people into two different classes, whether it's black and white, wealthy and poor, you create conflict on a everyday, out on the streets level, which demands a government to step in and take control. We have got to be aware of these things, don't you think, Vinny?
One thing that I've been arguing with a lot of people about recently, both in person and on social media, is the denial that there is any kind of planned agenda. Now, let me explain something. The people behind this planned agenda, people like David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, George H.W. Bush, just to name three American counterparts, have admitted publicly on record that this is their plan, that this is what they're doing, and that they're proud of it. Okay? They've admitted it. You don't, and this is the thing. This is not about evidence anymore. We've got all the evidence. We've got all the truth. This is about mind control. Okay, specifically cognitive dissonance. People who are, and I've been through this. I'm not sure how many people have become aware of our current society's real problems that haven't experienced this. The grief stages. Your mother just died, and she died in a really terrible fashion. And the people who just killed her are now after you. Boom, how do you feel? First of all, you've got that huge amount of loss. Anger, rage, you've got confusion, and you've got depression, and you've got all of the subsequent stages of grief. I think there's like six of them or something.
And there's five.
To learn that your government, say, for example, killed some of your people on 9/11, or at least played a hand in it, or at least allowed it to happen, is much similar to losing a loved one, because you're indoctrinated from high school, from the ground up, from the neck up, to see the government as your god, your protector, as a parent, more or less. And it's kind of like learning that your dad's a pedophile all these years, you know, and I never knew. And how bad an effect is that on you? Because you haven't just lost something that's a figment of your imagination that you knew was illusory. You just lost something that was very, very real to you. And this is why you get a whole bunch of truthers who go crazy. And believe me, if you haven't gone at least a little crazy from time to time trying to deal with the truth and evidence, there's probably something at least a little bit wrong with you, maybe. Because what society deems to be sane, you now have to learn is actually insane. And in an insane world, a sane man must appear insane. Hence why a lot of crazy conspiracy theorists, and I call myself a conspiracy theorist, mind you, are actually starting to kind of drift into the other side. And it becomes almost like they hold a pin on their fellow man, calling them a sheeple and that kind of thing, which I think is utterly disrespectful, because you used to be one of them, okay? Which is why I call them slave scum instead. And
that's horrible. I mean, I would rather call them sheeple. I mean, I was one, yes. Agreed. We were all sheeple at one point in time, Vinny, but calling someone slave scum is just kind of, well, let's just call them sheeple. It's so much nicer, and the connotation is that they think the barbed wire and the dogs are there to keep them safe.
Ah, but just because I'm calling somebody else slave scum doesn't mean I think that I'm not one of them too, okay?
Well, that's... I mean, I still think that I operate within certain constraints, constraints, I should say, of logical everyday process. I mean, Vinny, honestly, I'm a slave scum or I'm a sheeple simply because I get up every morning, I get in my car, and I drive to a job that I need to make money in order to pay for all the things that I use and have every day. Yeah, exactly. I have a slave job just like everybody else, and I'm aware of it. That doesn't mean I'm any less free. It just means I'm aware of it. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'm trying to get through to people is to just accept, you know, the reality. I am a slave. I am basically scum that can be wiped off at any point by a jackbooted thug for absolutely no reason. And any complaints that go to the police complaints authority about that jackbooted thug in a blue or black uniform, whichever the case may be, not only will you be the one who gets in trouble, that cop that did the thing in the first place is going to get off, right? That's basically the way it is. The game is rigged. And the only way to win a rigged game is to cheat. And unfortunately, they're already cheating on us. Every single day we're getting cheated on, all right? Every time you put your signature down on a piece of paper in order to get out a loan for money that isn't in circulation and increases the ineffable amount of quantitative debt that is actually raining down and hammering absolutely everybody. You know, like, dig this, bro. Dig this. You're going to love this. In New Zealand, in 2008, before the Federal Reserve banker, who was common mark with the derivative market, came to be, we had $18 billion worth of national debt. Mm-hmm. In the first 8 years of his prime ministership, we got up to $112 billion in off-the-books derivatives debt, plus an extra $80 billion in on-the-books debt.
Wow. I mean, let me point something out to the listeners out there. New Zealand has 4 million live registered residents. That is the same population as the city of Houston, Texas. They are a country that they have billions of dollars of debt. This is insanity. I mean,
billions of debt. And the derivative ones that was like $112 billion can be leveraged over again and expanded endlessly as well. And they haven't been reported on since 2011. And the report that just came out yesterday was that our 4 million people are taking on something like $87 million of debt a day.
Well, I mean,
some crap. I don't know what it is. And here's the thing. Statistics start to lose their meaning when you go beyond what somebody can understand in terms of money. If I say $1 billion to you, have you ever had $1 billion? Do you know what you can do with it? No, you freaking don't. So you don't actually understand. It's too big for you. It's like saying that the nearest star cluster or something like that is 10 times the square of the root of pi of light years away from you or something. It's too big to freaking comprehend.
Well, let me throw this out into perspective, okay? We'll start with the dollar amount, $1 billion, since you brought that up. Now, for everybody out there who's listening, if you don't understand what $1 billion is, if you were born at the time that Christ was supposedly born and you spent a dollar a second every day since he was born, it would take you 36,000 years to spend $1 billion. $1 a second for 36,000 years. I mean, that's every second you're awake and every second, not awake, but that's every second of every day of every year, continually spending $1 after another. It would take you 36,000 years to reach $1 billion. We are in debt to the tune of trillions, which are $1,000 billion per trillion. So you multiply that by 1,000, it will take you, what is that? An additional, it'll take you 3,600,000 years to spend $1 trillion. It's insanity. If you spent a dollar a second of every day, day in and day out, since the birth of Christ, it would take you 36,000 years to spend $1 billion, 3.6 million years to spend $1 trillion. These numbers are staggering. And we're in $128 trillion worth of debt, unfunded and funded, in the United States of America.
They're not including the off-the-books derivatives markets, which are like $2 quadrillion, which haven't been reported on since like, what, 2009, 2012, there about something?
And people wonder why I prepare for economic collapse, among other things. I mean, dude, I want to keep eating. I don't want to be like some schmuck in the Weimar Republic in 1929 going, well, if I take this wheelbarrow full of German marks to the bakery, I might get a loaf of bread. You know, they were actually burning German marks in 1930 to keep warm. They were papering their houses with them. They were so friggin' worthless. And that's exactly what's going to happen worldwide.
That reminds me of a scene yesterday from the Stallone movie Cliffhanger, where they got like these Federal Reserve notes that are denominated in $1,000 bills, and they're just right. giant suitcases in the top of a mountain. And he grabs one of them, and he's trying to get away, and they've got to build a fire, and they're burning these bundles of $1,000 notes. And he goes, "Man, this place costs a fortune to heat."
That's great. Well, I mean, it's the same principle, guys. I mean, this is what alternative media is about, in my opinion. It's the reason why I kicked my prepping into high gear. I mean, I was all about being prepared for disasters and everything. I lived through Hurricane Andrew in 1992. I lost everything. I was all about disaster preparedness, but you know, some years ago, things just started to click. Nothing's working the way it should. And it was partly in listening to Vinny. It was partly in listening to Christopher Green and other members of the early alternative media movement that really kind of pushed me into high gear and becoming more and more aware of everything that's going wrong, painfully, pitifully wrong with this poor little world of ours and the societies that we have built, economically, socially, in every way, shape, or form that really kicked my prepping into high gear. And I don't talk about it a lot because I don't feel like I should inject too much of myself into encouraging people to be prepared, other than to give them some backstory about why I do this. But really, guys, you've got to listen to someone like Vinny. You've got to listen to Rob Revere. You've got to listen to Sean Raspatello. These guys, and they talk about what's called quote unquote conspiracy, quote unquote theories. These things are only theoretical to you because you haven't seen enough proof yet, or it's not been proven to your satisfaction. Frankly, guys, 20, 30 years ago, you could have told me that the Federal Reserve Bank was going to bankrupt the United States, and I would have laughed at you. And it's still considered a conspiracy theory if you believe that we're running into a brick wall, fiscally speaking. 99.9% of the people out there don't believe their government is shanking them.
Yeah, it's around about that. And having this sort of existence, when you do, in fact, go on the coalface and you're actually talking to people, you're looking at the research and things of that nature and commenting about it, it is actually quite a painful endeavor, and very few people can actually do it. They don't have the personality type. I mean, me, thankfully, I was bullied all the way through high school and rejected most of the time throughout my life, and come from a broken home. So being in front of many, many people and speaking my mind was something I actually had to develop as a survival mechanism. So I'm using that survival mechanism in as positive a way as I can. For every fault that we have, sometimes we've got a talent to overcompensate for it. And I think that actually is probably speaks to the best of us, really, is that the things that happen to you in your life, which are painful, expensive, difficult, and disillusioning, can indeed be the very motivation you needed in order to get off of your comfortable ass and do something about these things that are happening in the world. It's not somebody else's problem. You live here too. And when right. it comes to survival, you know, I heard the two funniest survival kit items that people don't think about. Number one, toilet paper. it's all good when you've got like pork and beans in a can, but when you have to wipe your bum with your hand, it gives a whole different perspective on survival. And the other survival item, which everybody has but very few people remember, is actually the most important. It's right between your ears all the time.
Your brain.
If you're thinking survival, you will survive. Or at least it's slightly more likely than somebody who panics and runs around screaming, "Oh crap, we're gonna die."
What is that? That tells you, I always advocate, Minnie, and I always have, knowledge weighs nothing. The more you know, the less you have to carry. And knowing things and being calm and cognizant and having skills will keep you alive quite a bit longer than panic.
That's absolutely right. And also, In your general life, this is why I took a month off, Falcon, is because I was like approaching burnout. And doing this kind of gig, I mean, most radio show hosts don't last 6 months, let alone 12, let alone 4 years, like I have. And there's a reason for that. It's because it's really intense. You have to be on the ball. You have to be paying attention. You have to be. It's actually quite an operation to just pay attention fully and be there in completeness and be emotionally open with people for several hours a day on talk radio. And this,
absolutely,
know thyself. If it's time to take a break, if you're starting to get really angry at everybody for no reason, if you're retreating inwards, if you're starting to hate people just in general and not want to have anything to do with them, and you're still on talk radio and whatnot, you need to be taking a couple of weeks off, son, maybe a month, right?
Right.
I watched this documentary one time, and they said that counselors, people who actually sit there as a job all day, every day, listening to people's problems, unless you're a sociopath, you can't hear people's problems without them becoming part of your psyche. Okay. Right. What you see and what you experience becomes part of you, whether you like it or not. And it's kind of like, I played a really, really nasty father character in a play one time when I was in 16. And after the play and the production was over, the drama teacher told us all to take a piece of our costume and say goodbye to it, and say goodbye to that character and throw it in the box. And I didn't understand at the time why they were doing that until I heard about Heath Ledger's death and what Jack Nicholson told him before he went to go and play the Joker.
Right.
Nicholson told him, don't play this role. It'll kill you.
It almost killed Nicholson. I mean, he had a lot of secondary effects from it. I mean, as campy as the 1989 Batman seemed, he did not act for about a year after that in a live role because he had to literally refine himself. I mean, he played a very believable psychopath, but Ledger dove in with both feet and just literally became this insane person. And it led to a very, very bad downward spiral. In fact, he was making his movie, The Legendarium of Dr. Parnassus, when the quote-unquote accidental overdose occurred. And I truly watched the beginning of that movie with an open mind, but I could see just the insanity, the frayed edges of his psyche peeking through at times, and it was really, really scary and dark.
And that's why it's so important to know yourself. It doesn't matter who you're listening to on talk radio, because you don't have a relationship with these people. If you're listening to me and you're not part of my life, if you didn't like come to my birthday or whatever and hang out with me and my mates for a couple of hours and have a few laughs or everything, you don't really know me. And just because you can hear it, just because you can see it, doesn't make it real. Your mind believes otherwise, though. Your mind will make this relationship appear real. That's why I lose so many followers in such a violent capacity so often, and have hundreds of people blocked on my Facebook because they think that they know me, and as soon as I say one thing that's even slightly outside of their paradigm, this pinnacle thing that they put people up on, and I used to do this to talk radio show hosts myself. I used to do that to people in general. You hold people in high esteem. But as soon as you see that they're actually really human, just like you, that you lose your inspiration all of a sudden in a lot of people, because you're expecting something different. And the savior mentality that all of us kind of like naturally have, we all want to be saved by somebody or something. We don't want to have to be the ones to fight off the lion by ourselves. We'd rather have somebody else do it, you know, with a giant spear or whatever, and skewer that big kitty right through the chest places, and so that we can go back to playing backgammon around a fireplace in the Kalahari bush. That's what we want, ultimately, at the end of the day. But unfortunately, You have to be the one to train yourself how to make a spear and to kill a lion if necessary. You are the one who has to know how to talk to a police officer properly so that you don't wind up having him, do something really nasty to you. And sometimes there's no choices at all. Nothing is for certain. That's the real problem with it. And people cling to what they think is certain so blindly and so aggressively that anyone who says anything that's outside of their current belief structure, they perceive to be an enemy. Not just any enemy, but a dangerous enemy within. Start accusing you of being a shill or a crazy person or a conspiracy theorist. They'll throw out names at you. And again, like I say, if you're seeing it, you feel it. So that's half the reason why a lot of people don't survive in alternative talk radio is because you will, I can guarantee you will be abused by countless people who don't know you, don't listen to you, and don't care about you. In life, you can only be friends with and associate with, if you want to actually achieve anything worthwhile, people who inspire you, people who encourage you, and people who enlighten you. If they're outside of that holy trinity right there, don't make an effort to keep those people in your life. I've lost so many friends. You know how many friends I've still got from high school, university, work history? Zero.
Yeah, I have four. And I can say without question, without equanimity, Kurt, the gentleman I wished happy birthday to at the beginning of the show, Sean, Gus, and I will mention the last one is Chance. These guys are friends from high school, from junior high school that I've known for a good long while. I lost contact with them. I regained contact with them, and they are truly like brothers. I mean, these people are people that inspire me. They keep me going. They encourage me. They are true blue friends. Those are the people that I still have from my younger years. Other than that, I'm really just, I don't know these people anymore. It's been 25 plus years, in my case, almost 30. It's bad, yes, that I don't have friends from that era, but I have new friends. I have people like you that are part of that trinity. They do inspire. They do educate. They do support me. And it's just a phenomenal feeling. But I just want to say one thing.
I'll tell you what's on my mind. It's butt cold out here, and I'm fresh out of beer.
And it is butt cold out here, man. It's winter in Texas. I mean, geez, talk about climate change. It's friggin' 30 degrees where I'm sitting, man. And this is not supposed to happen.
I think it is supposed to happen because, as I mentioned, what did I mention in the last hour? That NASA said that the sun's got less output now? Or something like that. Plus, you know, if you interview Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org, he's been documenting all these cases where it's been snowing when it's above freezing point. You know, it's like physically impossible, but it happens anyway. And all these giant things, it's like artificial snow. They've been trying to burn it with a lighter. It won't burn. There's some really, really messed up stuff going on with the climate, and it can't all be natural. And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry for that little technical inconvenience. I don't know.
Yeah, I am sorry.
You know what we felt like to me? It felt like a simultaneous technological failure. You dropped out, and I dropped out off the internet at the same time.
It's a conspiracy. I actually had a blue screen of death. I honestly, Vinny, I think we got hacked. Oh, God. On, get your tinfoil on. The Men in Black are coming.
Quick, jump to conclusions before it's too late.
Oh, wait, that's the only exercise I get. Give me a break. It's the only exercise I get, jumping to conclusions. Now,
I have a rope that I do it with, you know. I jump rope to conclusions.
And I apologize to all the listeners out there, Raz Radio, Revere Radio Network, and my home LMR, Liberty Movement Radio. Obvious technical issues. I got a blue screen of death. Vinny dropped out at the same time. He lost all connection. So we have no recourse but to believe it's a conspiracy. Smile when you say that, son.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking about solving problems and taking personal responsibility for it, have you seen the movie Malcolm X by Spike Lee with Denzel Washington? Brilliant film.
It was a brilliant film, and I don't necessarily
– hold on. Radio.
I just got to get back in here. I don't necessarily agree with 100% of the political messages being put out in a lot of these films, but I do agree that the stories need to be told. I mean, the stories about Martin Luther King Jr. I heard that it made a really bad movie. The people who made the movie, they could have done better just putting it out on TV. Oprah Winfrey, of course, being involved. I hate that fat sow. And all she represents, I mean, great on her. She's a successful black woman, multi-billionaire, but her politics and her beliefs are just not some that I can fall in line with. And I heard the Martin Luther King Jr. movie was really, really bad. I mean, they could have done better on TV.
Well, I do think that what comes out of people, and it's like I was saying before about putting people up on a pedestal and having heroes and you have to agree with them on everything or whatever, that they're not human, okay, if that's the case. And if there is somebody on this planet that you agree with absolutely everything on, you should probably kill that person because they're trying to steal your identity. I think
that's absolutely right.
But there's two parts of that Malcolm X movie that actually really kind of spoke to me as a member of the truth movement. The first one, his description of the house Negro. Okay, now, they're all slaves on the plantation, but there's a couple of house Negroes that live in the house. And when the boss is sick, they go, "Boss, are we sick?" And he cares about his enslaver. And when the other people say, "Hey, we need to escape, we need to get out of here," he goes, why? I got everything nice and comfy right here in the house." Right?
Right.
And that's the thing. We're all the slave Negroes because we don't want to leave the house. We don't want to leave that comfort. We don't want to leave that safety. It's almost like we believe that that is a fair compensation for being slaves, is that we get kept comfortable. But you don't really advance as a person if you're trying to keep comfortable all the time and remain a slave. Do ya?
I mean, it's like I said. I mean, if you think that you're free, you're more a slave than you realize. Our freedoms are not given to us by a government. It is not given to us by another person. Our freedoms are granted to us by the natural right of being born. You are a free being only by the rights given to you by the great creator of your belief or the great creator of the universe, in my opinion. But the fact of the matter is people think that their rights derive from a government, and that's wrong. And then you have other people in the liberty movement and the anarchist movement that believe that the United States government is nothing more than a statist thing, and it's far from that. It's 180 degrees around from that. Look, there's two terms that I encourage people to look up, and Vinny, you probably know these. They are collectivism and individualism. And G. Edward Griffin, he's an awesome author. He wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island, very, very intelligent man. He made a series of videos called Collectivism versus Individualism. And you need to watch these videos. If you haven't, go on YouTube and look them up. There's like five or six of them. If you can't find them, go to my YouTube channel. Just search my name, Don Pontius, and you'll find it. It's one of my watch lists. Take a look at these videos. Watch them. And it's a profound thing. It doesn't matter what name you put on a political party, left, right, up, down. You have two principles that are vying for control. You have collectivism, which is the will of the group, versus individualism, which is the will of the individual. And our nation, the United States, was founded on principles of individualism. We are a republic. We're a constitutional republic where the voice of the one outweighs the voice of the many, or it should. We've slowly but surely been poisoned with this word democracy. The founding fathers hated democracies. They said it was the worst form of government ever invented by man. They were vehemently against being called a democracy. We were known as a republic until Until like when I was a kid, we're being called a democracy in the news. We're being called a democracy in the newspapers, on TV. We're not a democracy. I feel like slapping people every time they say, well, we're spreading democracy around the world. I'm like, really? You're a screw up. We're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. That's what we are. And democracy is just, it's a horrifying word. It's a collectivist word.
Yeah. Basically. There's a wee bit of feedback on there. But I was wanted to say that the other thing about it is the problem with democracy is that you expect the majority to be right all the time, the majority to solve all the problems all the time. And going back to Malcolm X, in the movie, this white woman comes up to him and she says, so how can I, as a liberal white woman who believes in racial equality, how can I help your cause? What should I do? And Malcolm says to her, nothing, and walks off. And what that said to me, kind of like taking that into a truth of perspective, imagine somebody comes up to, a leader in the truth movement or something and say, how can I, as a socialist or as a believer in democracy, how can I support the truth movement and to bring about awareness of 9/11 and things of that nature? And you go, nothing. There's really nothing you can do because you haven't kind of gotten over the fact that it's not your problem to solve. And more to the point, even if you start trying to participate, if you haven't had the prerequisite motivation to go out there and participate in the movement, you're not going to be in it for the right reasons. More to the point, you're not going to stay in it for very long. You're going to get disillusioned. Right. You're going to go out on the first day or something like that with a megaphone and a camera and start blaring stuff all over the streets and have people spit on you and somebody try to push you over or something like that. And you're going to get demotivated. You're like, oh my God, these people don't believe that it takes more than kerosene jet fuel to make 100 stories of steel and concrete explode into particleized dust. This is really, really unfortunate. People ain't going to believe you. People ain't going to believe you. I mean, just because, a dude said to me, but I've got the truth and I've got the facts and I've got the evidence. Why won't they believe me? It's because you're not dealing with people who are capable of absorbing that right now. It's kind of like being in a household where you were never loved or taught how to love. How are you going to love somebody else or create a household with that kind of environment? It just doesn't happen. It's basically like you have to realize what your limitations are emotionally, physically, spiritually, and then realize that it's kind of like a rubber band. You can stretch it so far to the point where it snaps, but you can keep stretching it a little bit at a time and the rubber band will actually eventually start getting bigger. You can add things on like blocks of Lego and build yourself up slowly over time, or you can basically get really badly traumatized by some kind of authoritarian figure and grow up a lot quicker. Because, and again, this is why I recognize. Listener called me one time to go, Vinny, my family won't believe me. They won't listen to anything I've got to say. What can I do? And I go, I don't know. Call the cops and say that they've got drugs hidden in the house or something like that. You know, because as soon as you get a SWAT team in your house, tearing apart your furniture, cracking open your TV and your stereo systems, looking for drugs that aren't there, and then not apologizing and then arresting you anyway, and then planting drugs on you and then throwing you in jail for a couple of years, you'll stop sticking up for their side of the story in a quick fashion. I'm not being entirely serious, but this is basically how it works. Trauma-based mind control, I think, can do two things to you. It can either A, do the Stockholm Syndrome thing, where you always stick up for your enslavers, or B, it'll basically incite a fire in your heart, in your mind, and you will use that trauma as a weapon to disable the powers that be from being able to do that to anybody else, especially those that you love.
Right. And again, it's all a matter of perspective, and the cognitive dissonance experienced by a vast majority of people out there vast majority of non-freedom movement listeners, non-alternative media consumers is staggering. And, you know, everybody asked me, well, I'm trying to get my family to prepare. I'm trying to tell them about our government, tell them about the derivative market, tell them about economic collapse or civil war in the United States or the possibility of a police state, you know, martial law, etc. But they won't listen to me. They think I'm crazy. They think I'm paranoid because I'm preparing. And I just look at them and I say, you can't save everybody. I mean, there were only so many life vests on the Titanic, hon. There were only so many boats on the Titanic. You cannot save everybody. Those who are willing to grab the life vest or get in the boat, great. Those who are not, I love you, but I'm sorry.
Well, you know how there's many, many different roads to the same truth? I learned that truth in sales. You know, telemarketers, they call you up when you're having dinner and try to sell you something. Well, I was a telemarketer for a phone company that actually was saving people money on their bills. And chances are, even though you never heard of me, never heard of the company I was working for, every second person that picked up that phone would buy what I was selling them. Because I could convince them pretty quickly that it was actually good for them and it was actually going to do some benefit. However, 50% of the calls don't listen to anything you've got to say. Do not trust anything whatsoever. I've had this phone company forever and so on and so forth. Now, two reactions are possible at that moment of rejection. Number one, aggression, because, oh, mate. Being rejected doesn't feel good, so often you'll get reactionary about it and you get angry. But because you're representing a company, you can't do that. And so now when you're representing the truth movement on the social forums and the media and the YouTube comment sections and things like that, you've got to actually restrain yourself as well, because you're not just uttering your opinion. What you're doing is you're also feeding fuel to the fire to anybody who likes demonizing truthers and might use your comments as an example. Okay?
Right.
And the other action upon rejection, instead of getting really angry at the people who reject your ideas, is actually just to hang up the phone and make your next call. Okay?
Right.
And look for somebody who's not totally belligerent and impossible to convince to talk to.
Absolutely. Vinny, we're gonna wrap up the show now. So why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners where they can get some more Vinny Eastwood, get some of that good Vinny Eastwood Show vibe from you, some of that awakening, that awareness radio. Why don't you go ahead and shill your products?
Well, my listeners often say, just hook it to my veins. Vinny in your veins. It's got to love that. Yep. Anyway, it's at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And I am raising money right now for some equipment so I can make my very first documentary. It's going to be a really, really good, fabulous one. If you go to the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, you can check out the description of there. We're going to go into Freemasonry and banking, secret societies, roundtable groups, the UN, business roundtable, that kind of thing, Agenda 21, climate change control, toxic environment studies, including smart meters and Wi-Fi, dirty electricity, the corruption of the organics industry, Codex Alimentarius, and also how to basically capture a state so that you can influence at the top level all of its policies, as well as the intelligentsia and how they ship drugs everywhere in order to finance black ops and assassinate good people, and how they use false flag terrorism and what have you in a problem reaction solution type phase to change society as they want it to, along with many other topics, rounding off with a little bit of common sense solutions that everyone can implement in their own lives, some inspiring stories, discoveries, and case studies that illustrate successful resistance to tyranny throughout history and why there is cause for hope and a moral obligation to play a part in ensuring the survival of the free human race. I say free human race because there's not much point in survival if we're not free.
That's absolutely awesome points. And one of the reasons why I've always loved your stuff and your shows. And I want to encourage my listeners to go out there and support Vinny and his endeavors to make this this documentary, because I could not I could not take it if I had to take it in 10-minute increments on YouTube. I mean, I would love to see a Vinnie Eastwood documentary. It would just kind of blow doors on everything else. But I also want to remind listeners that I'm on, that I myself am on the Week in Review with Kevin Harris coming up here in about 2 hours. It actually, I get on in the last hour of his show from would be 9 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern. Well, I'm going to talk about some fermented food stuff and, you know, some other survival stuff is, and probably go crazy because Kovu's going to have butt hurt going on because I talked to Vinnie Eastwood here. Kovu Jankai is the other Kiwi that I know. He's on the Week in Review, and hopefully he's going to have his own segment pretty soon. Vinnie, thank you so much for being on, and I hope to have you on again in sometime in the near future. And I want to ask my listeners my simple question. Got preps? Pray for the best and prepare for the worst. This is Don Pontius. You've been listening to In Case of Emergency on Liberty Movement Radio, Revere Radio Network, and RAS Radio. Stay tuned for Kevin Harris and Week in Review up next.